Hello and welcome to 2022 and welcome to the inaugural episode of The Health of Our Hospitals, brought to you by the Nebraska Hospital Association. I am Jeremy Nordquist, president of the Nebraska Hospital Association, coming to you from our office here in Lincoln, Nebraska. Our staff at the NHA is thrilled to be bringing this podcast to you. I am so happy that Laura Radowdy has joined us to be our first guest on The Health of Our Hospitals. As many of you know, Laura retired at the end of 2021 after 21 years as the president of the NHA. So rather than sitting on a beach and taking in the sun and the sound of the ocean, Laura is here to help us kick off our very first NHA podcast. Thank you so much, Laura. As many of you know, I'm clearly the new kid here at the NHA and have a lot to learn. So Laura, please tell me and our listeners about the NHA and the valuable services this organization provides to our members.
Thanks, Jeremy. It's great to be with you today. It's always my pleasure to talk about the NHA and the wonderful services that we have available. We really have a focus on three primary areas. First is advocacy, second, education, and third, data or quality. In the advocacy arena, the NHA serves as the influential and innovative voice of Nebraska's hospitals on the state and federal level. We've developed strong relationships with our elected officials, both at the state and federal level, to guide them in pursuing effective rules and regulations to permit our members to successfully do their jobs. In our education activities, we work to assist our members in providing strong guidance to hospital employees, providing them with the expertise they need. We partner with many others, the ACHE, or the American College of Healthcare Executives, HFMA, UNMC, Bellevue University, and many others, to enhance employees' learning opportunities. We've established a leadership institute to train hospital employees in developing leadership skills. In the areas of data and quality, we've taken the lead in collecting data in concert with the Iowa Hospital Association to assist our hospitals in obtaining the data that they need to predict their future activities. In concert with the American Hospital Association and various federal agencies, we've become the leader in quality assessment and improvement. We offer training on specific quality measures, allowing our members to improve the overall quality of the care we provide to all our patients. The NHA has many other programs that we offer through our subsidiaries, which are the NHA Services and Bioelectronics. Our year-end member value report, which was sent to all of you in December, offers a comprehensive overview of all those activities.
Such important work that the NHA does for our members, and it's really a member-driven organization, too, in the services that that we provide, right? Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And we have an opportunity to work with our members every year to evaluate what services they'd like us to continue to provide, to improve, and to maybe not provide in futures.
That's great. Laura, you led the Nebraska Hospital Association through certainly the greatest healthcare crisis in the history of our country. What are some of the lessons you take away from that experience, and are there any stories or moments over the last couple years that really stick out to you?
Yeah, you know, it's really been a challenge for so many of our members. You know, it's sometimes overwhelming that what they see daily, exhaustion and frustration and fear amongst all our colleagues. Yet, fortunately, despite all these challenges, they have been kind and sincere, hardworking, tenacious, and really never been willing to give up. There's been so many stories, Jeremy, about unrelenting capacity for caring, despite the potential harm that might come to those employees. And I'm so proud to have worked on behalf of our healthcare heroes.
Yeah, and they're blessed to have had you and this organization backing them up. We really are lucky in the state of Nebraska. Have so many people dedicating their lives to caring for their neighbors and in our hospitals. So let's turn the page here. We're now in 2022 and looking ahead. What have you heard, you know, as 2021 came to an end, and what have you heard about the challenges that our hospitals are looking at facing in the year ahead?
Well, with the ongoing challenges of COVID, at least for the foreseeable future, we'll continue to be challenged to provide care to those who are in need. And as a society, we'll be forced to address the consequences of being unvaccinated. Mm-hmm. In addition to depleting our resources, both people and beds and equipment, unvaccinated individuals continue to challenge the stability of our system. And we have to find a way to encourage those individuals to get vaccinated, to get boosted, wear masks, hand wash, and keep their distance from others. This task appears daunting, but we really have no other choice. I think we'll also continue to experience a shortage of various providers, be they doctors, nurses, pharmacists, or so many of the other professionals within the hospitals. These challenges have been with us for some time and will continue to be for a very long time, if not forever. But we really need to stay focused on building resiliency.
That's right. And you mentioned earlier the work that the NHA does in advocacy. And certainly as we start the 2022 legislative session, you know, workforce issues are going to be top of mind for our advocacy agenda to try to strengthen the pipeline of healthcare workers, maintain the workers that we have, and adjust as we need to wage pressures that our hospitals are going to be seeing as the whole economy is also seeing. You know, 21 years at the NHA, amazing service, amazing growth in this organization, and probably a lot of amazing changes in healthcare delivery over that time. Talk about some of the changes you've seen in healthcare delivery and healthcare policy during your leadership at the NHA.
Well, when I came to Nebraska in May of 2000, we were just beginning to implement the critical access hospital concept. You may know that Alma was the first hospital that was critical access, and they really were the testing site for all of us to figure out how do we identify this new model for payment and delivery. And over the years, we've grown to 64 critical access hospitals, a monumental shift in delivery and payment. Rural healthcare has dramatically improved over the last 20 years, not only because we developed partnerships, but because we've also had a dramatic improvement in technology, such as telehealth or telemedicine. The prevailing notion today is that hospitals are the backbone of their communities. I think we'd all agree with that, be it large urban centers in Omaha and Lincoln, medium-sized hospitals in Columbus, Fremont, Hastings, and North Platte, or any of our hospitals in small rural communities, and certainly those in western Nebraska.
That's great. What dynamic changes we've seen in the role of critical access hospitals stabilizing and preserving critical healthcare services in rural communities, so essential. So that was an amazing advancement in our healthcare delivery system here in Nebraska. So any parting advice for your successor as I step into this role at the NHA?
Oh, I think you'll do just fine, Jeremy, but I would recommend that you be strong in the face of adversity. There will be times when there will be challenges, both in the legislature, outside of the legislature, and your goal is going to be working towards providing the highest quality of care to all Nebraskans and really keeping us together, working in partnership. Let the members see you. Visit with them. You'll find them to be kind, warm, and engaging. Good luck, Jeremy.
Thank you so much, Laura, and thank you for your service to our member hospitals and to the state of Nebraska. We're all very grateful for that. Thanks again.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Yep, we'll be right back.
This is John Borton, Vice President of NHA Services, a for-profit subsidiary of the Nebraska Hospital Association. Since 1993, NHA Services has been an essential partner to the Nebraska Hospital Association and its members. We offer unparalleled opportunities for addressing the business challenges facing healthcare organizations. Utilizing our services supports the NHA and benefits all NHA members. NHA Services is committed to be the first resource Nebraska healthcare providers turn to for accessing workable, cost-effective solutions. Our partners undergo a strategic vetting process and approval by the NHA Services Board of Directors to ensure they provide the right products and services needed to respond to the changing healthcare landscape. Our preferred business partners have passed the highest standards for quality and service. At NHA Services, we're all about connecting hospitals and providers with the right companies to enhance efficiencies, lower costs, and deliver exceptional healthcare quality. We work hard to find the best business solutions in the marketplace so you can focus on doing what you do best, delivering exceptional quality care. On future podcast episodes, we plan to spotlight our preferred business partners, giving you a snapshot of their particular offerings and service lines. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to The Health of Our Hospitals, a podcast brought to you by the Nebraska Hospital Association. I am Jeremy Nordquist, president of the NHA. On The Health of Our Hospitals, we discuss pressing issues facing our hospitals and healthcare providers, and there probably is no more pressing issue right now in healthcare here in Nebraska and across the country than the nursing shortage. I'm going to set the table for our discussion with just a few key facts. By 2025, Nebraska will experience a nursing workforce shortage of 5,400 nurses across all levels of nursing, and this number is projected to increase. 73 of Nebraska's 93 counties have lower than national average ratio of registered nurses to patients, and 9 counties in Nebraska have no registered nurses at all. 79% of nurses reported they are experiencing symptoms of burnout, compassion fatigue, or both. Within 10 years, 1 in 5 Nebraskans will be over the age of 65, which means more patients to care for and also more nursing retirements. Nursing turnover is so great that hospitals will often have entirely new staffs, essentially by the data, entirely new staffs every 6 years. And that could also accelerate, as many say they're considering leaving the profession. We've also seen a remarkable explosion in competition for traveling nurses. In late December, our neighboring state of Iowa used federal funds to hire traveling nurses at rates up to $330 an hour. Confronting these facts, the hospital leaders on the board of the Nebraska Hospital Association established the Nursing Shortage Work Group to better understand these challenges and to develop recommendations for our hospitals and for our state's healthcare system. We are joined today by two esteemed guests who participated in the NHA Nursing Shortage Work Group. Workgroup Chair Terry Tipton Bruning, Vice President of Patient Care and Chief Nursing Officer at Methodist Hospital and Methodist Women's Hospital, and Teresa Delahoyd, Dean of Undergraduate Nursing at Bryan College of Health Sciences. Thank you both for joining us today. Terry, I'll start with you. How has the pandemic exacerbated the nursing shortage at Methodist Hospital and Methodist Women's Hospital?
Well, I think, Jeremy, you described kind of the perfect storm that's occurred with the workforce. Certainly in healthcare, you know, your staff are one of your most challenging areas, and certainly recruitment and retention is part of that. But as you described, yeah, the baby boomers are retiring, and we're seeing more and more opportunities for nurses outside of our four walls of the hospital. And now with the rising complexity with COVID-19, the patients being really sick, and then others putting off routine and preventative care, what we're seeing in our hospitals are really, really sick patients. So having a workforce shortage in all areas of healthcare has really been challenging. In 2020, the first year of the pandemic, I would tell you that staffing wasn't the biggest gap. It was more of a knowledge gap, learning, you know, how are we going to manage the pandemic and supplies and those kind of things. So it wasn't really until 2021 that we started to experience more of the early retirements, because I think some of the nurses just were getting burnt out. Nurses, again, leaving to go outside of the four walls of the hospital because there's many opportunities there. And then, of course, the lucrative nature of being a traveler. We definitely have seen nurses leave to go travel. Some did it because they were in that stage in their life where they could, and traveling is desirable to experience different parts of the country and be able to take time off in between assignments. But the dollars really were what drew most of the nurses away from our hospital. So the last 2 years, I would say 2021 and going into 2022, we've definitely seen the complexity of our patients rise, as well as the supply of our nurses not being able to meet that demand. Technology changes, just really being challenged with that.
Yeah. What, as you think about either those nurses that are leaving that are near retirement age, or those that are leaving for other reasons, what changes, or how has the hospital adapted to try to change the way they approach retaining those nurses?
Well, certainly nurses are present at all stages of the life continuum, right? From birth to death. And nurses are on the front line in all the crisis. So being the backbone of healthcare, our health system has certainly acknowledged that through financial incentives, whether it be bonuses, average hourly rates, those kind of things. We've had to stay competitive with the market to keep our departments open and continue to care for our community. But we've really put a lot of effort toward managing the workload. We've looked at our essential documentation and actually decreased the amount of documentation our nurses have to do to manage their workload. We created a role called a visitor liaison to help manage visitors during some of the restrictions so that our nurses didn't have to take on that workload. And we also cross-trained many of our nurses to work in the ICU, many of our mother baby nurses to work in the NICU, et cetera. So we've done a really good job with that. But we've also had to look at some different models of care, looking at team-based nursing. We developed a pool of clinical and non-clinical staff to help support the nurses with their workload and take some of the tasks that don't have to be performed by a nurse, which helps considerably. And one of the other things I would say is that what came really apparent was the emotional health of our staff and the burnout, the compassion fatigue. So we really became more intentional about the care of our staff, the self-care. We paid our staff to go to EAP. We actually brought EAP into our hospital for several weeks so that they wouldn't have to do that when they were off work. And we also expanded things like we have yoga, renewal rooms, massage, provided meals at the hospital, and even provided meals for the staff to take home to their families, just really trying to support them at work as well as at home. And then communication, being really two-way and hearing from the nurses what's gone well, what do we need to do more of, and you know, what things do we need to change, and continually improving our transition from novice to competent nurses. As we hire new nurses, we want to retain them with just a really good comprehensive onboarding and our nurse residency program. So those are just a few of the changes that we made to retain during the pandemic.
Yeah, those all sounds like a very broad array of approaches to trying to let nurses know how appreciated they are and how important they are to the team. You talked about the growth of traveling nurses, and as you bring traveling nurses in to a team environment into your hospitals, how do those nurses adapt? What are some of the trade-offs, the positives and minuses of bringing in those new members for a short period of time?
Yeah, I think the short period of time is the biggest challenge, but we do screen our traveling nurses very carefully, and we select what we really feel are quality nurses, and we give them a quality orientation and onboarding. They are valued, so we want them to feel valued. After all, they are taking care of our patients, so really making them feel part of the team. And really grateful for them because many have the experience. So they support caring for very sick patients in a very changing high-tech environment. So I really look at our travelers, and I believe the RNs that are working side by side with them are also grateful for them being here. It has helped us to identify areas that we can improve upon. You know, maybe there's an onboarding opportunity that we could be more clear about, whether it be informatics and the EMR, explaining those areas better, but to really strengthen and maintain our safety and our quality. But they also bring other ideas. They've been to other hospitals. And so it's really, again, that two-way communication. They share ideas of other hospitals that have, you know, provided a different maybe workflow. And we really take that to heart and have learned from them. So I think that's probably one of the great advantages. I really, you know, except for they're here for a tour or for 12 months and then they're going to leave and then we have to replace them. We really look at having travelers as a positive to help meet our patient care needs.
That's great. That's great. Well, as we look ahead to this, projected shortage of over 5,400 nurses by 2025, which really is not that far away, we certainly need a stronger pipeline of nurses going into the profession and moving through our educational program. So Teresa, I'd like to turn to you with your experience and your role and talk about the status and of our nursing programs and how we can improve the flow of nurses into our hospitals and other healthcare organizations. And one of those solutions that the work group discussed was looking at increasing the nursing instructor to student ratio. And it was a little bit of a lively discussion. Some pushback on that is not necessarily a silver bullet. Maybe talk about why we can't just up the number of students per nursing educator.
Sure, thank you. Well, right now, currently in the state of Nebraska, the ratio that is set in the state board regs is a 1-to-10 ratio on a clinical acute care type of setting. So one instructor faculty member for 10 students. I will tell you that most schools of nursing in the state do not go that high in an acute care setting. Some of it is due to limitations at the facilities who want to limit the number of students that are on an area just based on congestion and workflow, that sort of thing. The other piece to that is the safety piece. Having 10 students in an acute care area with such complex patients can become a safety issue for the faculty to be able to keep track of that and ensure that those students are really providing safe care for those patients. And so that's where some of that pushback, I think, came. I think sometimes people think, let's just increase numbers and that will just help. And we do have quite a number of qualified individuals who are applying to our nursing programs. But what happens is that we end up having, we have to choose the best ones that are coming through, and we're limited on the number of clinical sites. So we have competition for that. Plus the hospitals themselves have to think about how many they can handle. And that is also part of that clinical shortage piece. And so we've started to explore some new options throughout the state, such as dedicated education units at different facilities where they actually provide staff who are trained to be able to work with students and have them on the units, which then allows faculty to be able to take a different area, that sort of thing. So there are some new models that are being looked at with that, but there's also a nursing faculty shortage. And so that's a huge issue, trying to find qualified faculty who know how to teach. They know how to be a staff nurse, or they know how to be a community health nurse or a different type of a nurse, but to go in and teach a student is a whole nother set of skills. And unfortunately, the salaries for nursing faculty are not attractive. And so education does not pay as well as what they can make in any kind of a staff position, especially when they're working the extra shifts, when they get overtime, when they're getting these bonuses, nursing faculty are not. And so we really struggle with that as well. That's a nationwide problem with the salaries of nursing faculty. And so the nursing programs would love to be able to increase their numbers, but really the clinical pieces of that, the restrictions there are what limit us on it. And going higher with our ratios and having more students, just we really have to think about the safety in the care of the patient.
Right. You mentioned some qualified applicants being turned away. Are we seeing that kind of statewide? Do we see a differential between Omaha and Lincoln versus programs in Western Nebraska? And then are we getting qualified applicants in and getting them through to graduation and kind of statewide successfully passing the exams for licensure? Or, talk about that balance of the qualified applicant and those that are getting out of the program and getting licensed.
Yeah. So yes, there are definitely some qualified applicants that do not make it into the programs. And that is just because of those limits on how many that the schools can take. But I will say overall, we haven't had any shortage at all of applicants coming in. And when a student does come into any of our schools of nursing, we are committed to helping them be successful. There are always instances where a student begins a program and they decide that nursing is not for them. And so a lot of it does come down to what they're seeing on those clinical areas. And is this really something I want to do? And so we need those positive role models, those good environments to bring our students to get them excited, to be like, yes, I want to continue and I want to keep doing that. In terms of actual numbers, I don't have that specific of data. The state does track that with all the schools of nursing. We have to turn in annual reports to them and give them all of that information about how many students are graduating. And Nebraska has excellent pass rates. And so recently in our Nebraska Nursing News, in the latest edition, they did provide information that the overall state average was a 94.1% on NCLEX. And we are fifth in the nation for all states for our NCLEX pass rates. So our schools of nursing are doing an excellent job. We are graduating them. We just don't have capacity to meet the demand right now and the need. And I think that's not unique just to Nebraska. That is across the nation with the shortage that we're seeing.
Well, the positive results on the licensing exam is due to the work of wonderful education leaders like you. So thank you for those efforts. You were both part of our NHA nursing shortage work group, as I mentioned, where we brought together a couple dozen leaders in nursing and HR from around the state to talk about this challenge. As you had those conversations with your colleagues, I'm sure you have many of those conversations, but any things that really stick out to you or aha moments as we've just been discussing the nursing shortage here in Nebraska?
I remember one item related to the data was when we had an invited guest, who was a content expert, who shared the current and future state of the supply of support roles, many of those being technical or entry-level roles being far, far below the demand. And it really resonated that we are going to have to really be creative in developing different models of care for the current state. Because not only is it an RN shortage, there is a workforce shortage in general. It was that way before COVID. It's that way right now. And it's going to be that way once the pandemic starts to wind down. So I think we really have to be creative on how we can get these technical positions filled and these entry-level positions filled overall, because you can't offload the care to people if they're not there, whether it be phlebotomy, nursing assistants, you know, respiratory therapy, even, you know, unit secretaries on the unit to help keep things moving. So that was one that stuck out to me. And then I think the other that really caused me to pause was the longitudinal study that was put out by AONL and its foundation, came out last August. And that was most sobering. It dissected the top challenges of leaders over a period of time. I believe it was over a year's time. And the increase in the number or the percentage of leaders' intent to leave healthcare and the impact of the pandemic on leaders' emotional well-being and staff's well-being really gave me heartburn. I knew it. I see it. I feel it in my own healthcare organization. But to see that it was such a wide and deep reality is very concerning, which caused me to be even more intentional about our leaders and their development, as well as their self-care and the staff self-care.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Teresa?
I would dovetail on some of what Terry is saying. And I also would say that the amount of travelers that are being used, I mean, I knew there were lots of travelers being used, but the amount that these institutions are having to pay for these travelers. And I think the discussion around how do we retain the staff that we have when we're paying these travelers so much, that has just been kind of one of those, not necessarily an aha moment, but just to sit and pause, that sort of thing. Terry actually mentioned something at one of our first meetings that really resonated with me, and that was the different models of care. We've been doing nursing the same way now now for a little while, and I do think we're going to have to explore some different models. How do we utilize other professions? How do we work differently together as a team? Obviously, what we're doing is not working. And if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, you're going to continue to have the same results. We need to change with how healthcare has changed. And so that is interesting to me on how that innovation is going to happen and potentially even go back to models of care that we had in years past. And so those are some of the things that I think were kind of some of those take pause, aha moments for me.
Right. And that concept of really looking at innovative ways to deliver care with the staffs that we do have available is something that I'm hearing from every hospital leader I talk to. I think everyone's looking for those models, and hopefully together with leadership from individuals like you, the Hospital Association, we can help share best practices and help all of our hospitals and health systems adjust to the changing workforce dynamics. One last question. We're January legislative session is just kicking off, and policymakers are thinking about a lot of different bills and spending priorities. And if you had a magic wand or could pick one policy thing to say, you know, this is what we really should invest in, or here's a change that we really should make to help address any part of the workforce crisis, what would it be?
Sure. Well, Jeremy, I think you mentioned something earlier about the pipeline, and I'm going to kind of continue with my educator hat. If we don't have the pipeline, we're not going to be able to provide the workforce needs that these hospitals and healthcare facilities need. So I would advocate having dollars for nurses to be able to go back to school so that they could have it paid for. We could get it done in a timely manner. Many times nurses are having to work, they're working full time while going back to school to get the required degrees, the master's degrees or the doctoral degrees. And if there could be funding for that so that that could be expedited maybe a little bit more quickly, perhaps they could even not work during that time to be able to be a full-time student, but yet have that income and have things paid for. So I would say more money for education to be able to support. So we have the faculty to be able to train the workforce to get them out there. So that would be mine.
Very good. Very good. Terry?
I would say more funding to get into our high schools and to reinvigorate some of those programs to expose those high school students to the sciences, the health and sciences, and start to recruit at that time. Because I really don't think a lot of high school students know about healthcare. I mean, they may see, you know, people in scrubs and stuff, but there's so many opportunities in healthcare, and really to explore some type of career ladder where somebody can maybe start in dietary and go to surgical tech school and then maybe on to become a registered nurse, those kind of things that we need that funding to really use into our high schools, maybe even our junior highs, to start modeling some of those to get into healthcare, because really the health of our community is at risk right now. And I know that's more of a long-term solution, but if we don't start now, the crisis is going to continue.
Right. Well, very, very, very important priorities. And on behalf of the NHA, we certainly will advocate for concepts like that, and will be part of our legislative initiatives as the legislature does their work this spring. Well, thank you both on behalf of all of our member hospitals for the work that you did on the workforce shortage report. We really appreciate it. And thank you for joining us here today.
Thank
you. You're welcome. Thank you.
For our listeners, please keep an eye out for the NHA Nursing Shortage Work Group Report. It'll be coming out on our website and social media very soon. And thank you for joining us on the inaugural episode of The Health of Our Hospitals. And please subscribe to join us for future podcasts. Thanks.